Anyway, Lieutenant Colonel Carpenter and I have an interest in the history of aerial spray, so this is kind of an ongoing project, and I hope that in the future we could get some material coming in, into the, trying to get some of these photographs that are basically all just jumbled up in some of the historical files, but if we could get them in digitized, as like Dr. Miller was saying with his material, would be great. So looking at the history of aerial spray in general, the first recorded use of an aircraft for mosquito control was really just to do surveillance for areas where mosquitoes might be breeding. And that was as early as, I believe, 1919. And in the 1920s, between 23 and 29, there were some insecticidal powders that were applied. But the first actual liquid applications didn't happen until about 1939 with the advent of, or excuse me, 1931 with the development of DDT. The Army, of course, would be very interested in mechanisms to control mosquitoes, and as has been already mentioned, there was an initial collaboration between the Army Air Forces Board and the beginning Bureau of Entomology and Plant Quarantine Service out of Orlando, Florida. And what they were looking to do, there's ways to apply DDT from aircraft. And the main mechanism shown here in this cargo aircraft would be to just, you have your DDT on board in an oil solution, probably in a 55-gallon drum, and then insert it into the exhaust to create a smoke type of deposition material, and so that would stay airborne for a while. In contrast to that, the L-5, which is a smaller aircraft, was used for liquid dispersants, and you can see here this wind-driven propeller, which as it moved around would create about 50 pounds of pressure, and then move this whatever the pesticide material is, again DDT and oil, out through orifices on the spray boom here. And this set of the small aircraft would go about 100 miles an hour, and it could had only carrying capacity of about 32 gallons and a 30-foot swath width. But it would be used through the Korean War. We also had some big guns here with a 625-gallon capacity, the C-47. And in this scenario here, and it's looking like it's a little dark over there on the screen, but using the Vernelli effect, the Venturi effect, you have wind that moves across a surface and you pull the pesticide out. And this was a belly dispensing operation here. These were then put into practice there during World War II, mainly in the Pacific Theater, and as we've already heard, where malaria was such a big problem. So there were several different aircraft used. Some were the medium bombardment style, basically old bombers, and these were spraying the beachheads once they developed the techniques. So following World War II, the special DDT flight was created in the Army Air Forces and placed there at Greenville Army Airfield. But the following year, the Air Force became a separate service, and so they changed the location. Basically, they disbanded that group. Some of those individuals then moved to Langley Air Force Base in Virginia, and we have the special aerial spray flight, the creation of that, that lasted for several years. In this particular photo here, you see the spray flight, both the enlisted and the officers. Three of these individuals actually ended up perishing in Vietnam, and this would be the bird of choice at that time, which was the C-47. In 48 and 49, the Alaskan Air Command and the Alaskan Insect Project embarked on a serious study of large-scale aerial spray tests. And coming on as a new lieutenant myself and working and doing droplet analysis, I kind of felt like we were using a new technology. So the first time I saw this photograph, I thought, wow. You think you're working with some new stuff, but since necessity is the mother of invention, people started looking very carefully at this, and this involved entomologists from a variety of walks of life. And the main things they did here is they looked at the droplet size. They also looked at what might be the minimum effective dose and how quickly insects will repopulate an area after you've done some spraying. So, and all these technologies and this idea then went home to the Langley Aerial Spray Flight, and this has started to develop a group of individuals with a specialty in aerial applications of pesticides. In Korea, in this case, for Korea, early on, I think it was recognized, and basically coming out of World War II, where we realized how important vector-borne illness can be, it was recognized early on that there was going to be a problem. And from the literature that I saw, there was already 800 cases of malaria, 700 cases of Japanese encephalitis. And so the 5th Air Force, along with other divisions, Army divisions, started developing aerial spray procedures. And yes, actually this is an unmarked photograph as well, and I don't know if it is Korea or not, so we'll have to look into that, as Colonel Sames suggested. But these medium bombardment aircraft were, from what I've read, were used to basically spray the areas that were behind the actual fighting. And they were on a program where they were spraying, cities like Seoul about every 14 days. Cost at that time, and this actually didn't include the pesticide in this particular metric down there. Back at, I guess I don't know if I was clear about that, but the special aerial spray flight wasn't actually involved in that. They did take one of the entomologists, Lieutenant Wesley Knoll, and he was advising and running the Air Force aerial operations there in Korea. So back at home, they were still using the C-47 here. And I did read where the placement of these wing booms now under the wing was actually an idea by a Navy entomologist. Yeah. And so here we've now moved into liquid applications in these scenarios at Dover Air Force Base. And this wouldn't quite be ultra low volume yet, but that technology was around, right around the corner in the early 60s. Vietnam then in the 1960s saw the advent of the C-123 come into play. The Air Force was not the only folks doing operations here, and the Navy was also doing some. In one of the papers that I read, it did state that their helicopter operations, at least with the herbicides, came to an abrupt end when the piping and the material just basically disintegrated. So the Navy entomologists weren't always cracker jacks at every situation. But what we have is two major thrusts here. The ranch hand operation with, of course, the notorious Agent Orange and other Agent Purple and various other defoliants was highly successful for the military, even though it was a navigational nightmare. And both the mosquito operation, which is less known, and the ranch hand operation utilized folks from the Air Force aerial spray flight, but not initially. Initially, it was just try to figure out how you were going to apply these applications. And many times in the military, where communications is not at a premium, it was only after they had started this that someone said, there's a group of individuals that does this full time. So they brought them in there and they could start talking about things like swath width and droplet size. Just to put it in perspective on how long these things went on, Operation Fly Swatter flew 1,400 missions during that time period and sprayed 500,000 gallons of malathion. And Ranch Hand actually had 11 million gallons of Agent Orange. So the fallout from this, a lot of, because there certainly were health problems associated with the Ranch Hand situation, but many people thought that they'd been sprayed by Agent Orange when actually it was just the mosquito spraying, because most of the Agent Orange sprays were actually over where any enemy combatants were. Simultaneously, the aerial spray flight was continuing their work back domestically, and during that time frame, let's see here, this they had moved on there what they called this around the world spray. They took off and originally went to Guam to do some applications there for mosquitoes, but then they did into Afghanistan and Iran as well for locust control, and then on to Thailand, eventually basically circumnavigating the globe. And this was what I call the heyday of aerial spraying. They were performing a mission every week, and most of the time it was both domestic, but it was also OCONUS, places like the Bahamas and pretty much everywhere. So by now, the C-123 had become the aircraft of importance. And I use this as an example of perhaps a military application that then went to the civilian world. And we're jumping forward here to Hurricane Andrew in southern Florida, where we've got these DC-3s spraying in formation for mosquitoes following a public health emergency. One of the turning events for this aerial spray flight was during a St. Louis encephalitis epidemic in Dallas, and there were about 400 cases in the city alone, and about 7 to 9 deaths. Someone had the idea that, hey, we should spray for mosquitoes in the city environment. It hadn't been done before. And whether or not it actually interrupted the disease, and certainly the transmission stopped, you know, it's very difficult to actually put your finger on whether or not that worked, but mosquito populations plummeted. And one public health official at that time and said, hey, this is, you know, we don't have to worry about mosquito control anymore. We'll just use this national asset. And really, that's not a way we want to go. We want to look at mosquito control holistically in an integrated manner from the ground up. So as I mentioned, the C-123 was used for many years, and it had a much bigger capacity for application. It flew at quite a bit faster than the C-5, had a swath width of 500 feet, and now the price, this does include both the pesticide and the flying time, 42 cents an acre. In the 70s, one interesting operation that they did was the combat medfly in Nicaragua. This was back when, you know, if we applied pesticides outside of the country, it was still considered a goodwill gesture. And then domestically, they're now showing, this photograph shows applications of 7. These are deposition applications, and apparently this was the first time they've been used against Japanese beetles. In 1973, the active duty transfer to the aerial spray to Air Force Reserve Command, to the reservists. And you know, yes, I'm a reservist, I'm one of the full-timers, and there's a small core group of us that are full-time, and we make up the core component of the aerial spray group, both the entomologists and the pilots and other technicians that work with us. But the 123 was utilized between 73 and 85 in Rickenbacker, Ohio. Then they transitioned to the C-130 aircraft in 85. In between 85 and 92, we developed the modular aerial spray system, which is called the MASS, which is the system is still in use today. In 92, the whole unit moved up to Youngstown, Ohio, where we are currently. Since I joined the unit, I would say the big research event that we did is we took the spray booms off the wings and put them on the fuselage, which you can see here in this photo. And the purpose of that was that we always had this. We had a lot of clogging, because under the wing booms, they had these 135-foot wingspan, so you know, 60 feet coming out to the wing booms. We had a lot of clogging, and then we always had you have this chemical waste. There's 8 gallons in the lines, and while you can still kind of put those out at the end, there's always this question about is the pressure the right, and where is this going? And then cleaning up, you're going to have more additional waste products. And finally, the other item for moving to the smaller and more efficient fuselage booms was that we could put them together wherever we went. We didn't need additional auxiliary equipment. So if we ever mobilize to a austere environment, we're self-sufficient, which is pretty important. Capacity is now up to 2,000 gallons, and we're flying a lot faster. And we had actually our swath width is 500 to 2,000 feet. And in 2005, the cost was $1.10 an acre, which includes pesticide and flying time, but not costs of the salaries of individuals. This list here, I just want to highlight quickly, is what we've accomplished as far as emergency relief since it joined the Air Force Reserve, since spray has been taken over by the Air Force Reserve Command. And initially, so they were still doing quite a bit. They were doing stuff out of the country, or at least off the continent, even dengue spray here in San Juan, Puerto Rico. But starting about 89, we have got into a pattern now of our emergency sprays being specifically for mosquito control following hurricanes. It's Hurricane Andrew. I joined the unit in 99, participated in this Hurricane Floyd. Katrina and Rita was an extensive operation where it was the largest one since the unit, since spray had joined the reserve command. It was the 3 million acres here. And then what everyone that participated I guess I should say a large number of individuals that participated in this mission also participated in this one this last fall, and it made the transition quite smooth, and we were able to take care of this without any incidents, and in about 3 weeks for this deployment this last fall. So we saw the photographs of them flying over Dallas. So in some ways, the evolution of this is really hasn't changed that much. We had a new aircraft, and you still got the same pictures, just in color now. We're still doing some deposition sprays as well. Getting into this particular mission out at Hill Air Force Base, we're clearing bombing ranges of especially the targets of vegetation, so that unexploded ordnance can be recovered quite easily. But sort of a more ecologically sound operation that we're doing now is with range management up in the Pacific Northwest, and we're helping the native grasses come back by eliminating cheatgrass early in the season and allowing native bunch grasses to come back in, and that helps not only improve the heterogeneity of those rangelands, but also reduces the risk of fire. And this is a shot of us doing herbicide application. So we've come full circle, I guess. This is my final slide, and I'm just showing here what our current missions are today. We've got the rangelands herbicide sprays that we're still doing, but now we also do larvaciding. This is a liquid application of Altacid. We're doing mosquito spraying at a couple of bases up in North Dakota, BTI application here in North Carolina. Still doing biting midge control down in Parris Island, and we've developed two recent ones. We added Tyndall Air Force Base, which we haven't actually made an application yet there. But also down here at Homestead. This is a photograph of us flying in Louisiana recently, and the cover photo. I think I'll stop there.